Let me ask you something before we get going. At what altitude does the air stop having enough oxygen to keep your brain sharp? Most pilots I ask throw out a number like 18,000, maybe 14. The honest answer is that your body starts feeling it a lot lower than the regulation ever mentions, and that gap, the space between what the rule requires and what your brain actually needs, is exactly where good pilots get into quiet trouble. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to take one of the most misunderstood little numbers in the whole rulebook and lay it out flat on the table. The Supplemental Oxygen Rule, 14 CFR 91-11. By the end of this, you'll know exactly when the regulation says you need oxygen, and just as important, when your body says you need it a long time before that. Let's walk through this together. Before we climb up there, a quick word about our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to hold on to the milestones that matter, the ones you worked hard for. That's AviationSoul.com. Alright, oxygen. Here's the thing nobody tells you clearly when you're a student, because most primary training happens down low where this never comes up. The air up high has the same percentage of oxygen it does on the ground, roughly 21%. That part doesn't change. What changes is pressure. As you climb, the air gets thinner, the pressure drops, and each breath you take pulls fewer oxygen molecules into your lungs. Same percentage, less to actually grab. That slow starving of oxygen has a name, hypoxia. And the reason it's so dangerous is that it feels good. It doesn't hurt. There's no alarm bell in your chest. It sneaks in as a little euphoria, a little tunnel vision, fingertips that feel warm, a math problem that suddenly seems harder than it should. You feel fine, right up until you're not, and the cruel part is that the very organ you'd use to notice the problem, your brain, is the thing being starved. So the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, wrote a regulation to keep us out of that trap, and they built it around three altitude numbers. Let's take them one at a time, because the wording trips up more pilots than almost anything else in Part 91. The first number is 12,500 feet. Here's the exact idea. Between 12,500 feet and 14,000 feet, cabin pressure altitude, the required minimum flight crew must use supplemental oxygen for any portion of the flight at those altitudes that lasts more than 30 minutes. Read that again slowly because there are two hooks in it. Hook number one, it's not the second you touch. 12,500, it's after 30 minutes up there, so if you pop up to 13,000 to top a cloud deck for 10 minutes and come back down, the regulation hasn't required anything of you. But if you're going to cruise at 13.5 for an hour crossing the mountains, the clock started at minute 31, and the crew needs oxygen for everything past that. Hook number two, and this one matters, it says the required minimum flight crew, not the passengers, between 12.5 and 14,000. The rule is talking about the pilots flying the airplane. The people in the back are on their own as far as the regulation is concerned. The second number is 14,000 feet above 14,000 feet. Cabin pressure altitude, the flight crew must use supplemental oxygen the entire time. No 30-minute grace period anymore. The moment you're above 14,000, the crew is on oxygen, full stop, for the whole duration. So notice how the rule tightens as you climb. Below 12.5, nothing required. 12.5 to 14 crew needs it after half an hour. Above 14 crew needs it continuously. Each step up, the leash gets shorter. The third number is 15,000 feet. And here's where the passengers finally enter the picture above 15,000 feet. Cabin pressure altitude, each occupant of the aircraft must be provided with supplemental oxygen. Read that carefully too. The word is provided. The regulation says the passengers must be provided oxygen above 15,000. It does not say they're required to use it. The crew above 14,000 has to actually breathe it. The passengers above 15,000 just have to have it available to them. Whether Aunt Carol in the back row actually puts the little cannula in her nose is legally up to Aunt Carol. So let's lock those three in. 12,500. Crew needs oxygen after 30 minutes. 14,000. Crew needs oxygen the whole time. 15,000. Passengers must be provided oxygen. 12, 5, 14, 15. If you remember nothing else from this segment, remember those three numbers and which one applies to whom. Now, one detail I glossed over that you cannot gloss over on a check ride because the examiner is looking for it. Every one of those altitudes is cabin pressure. Altitude, not the altitude on your altimeter necessarily. For those of us in unpressurized airplanes, the little Cessna, the Piper, the typical trainer, cabin pressure altitude and your actual altitude are the same thing. The cabin is the sky. But in a pressurized airplane, a Bonanza with a turbo and a pressurization system, a King Air, a jet, the cabin might be sitting at 8,000 feet of pressure while the airplane cruises at 25,000. In that airplane, the rule keys off the cabin, not the flight level. That's why the reg keeps saying cabin pressure altitude over and over. It's not being wordy, it's being precise. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The regulation is the floor, not the ceiling. 12,500 is a legal number. It is not a physiological number. Your body doesn't read the CFR. The Aeronautical Information Manual, the AIM, is refreshingly honest about this. It flat out recommends that pilots use supplemental oxygen above 10,000 feet during the day. And at night, it suggests going on oxygen as low as 5,000 feet. 5,000. Why so low at night? Because the first thing hypoxia steals is your night vision. The receptors in your eyes that let you see in the dark are some of the most oxygen-hungry cells in your body, and they start underperforming way before you'd ever feel lightheaded. If you've ever flown a night cross-country at 9 or 10,000 feet and thought the lights on the ground looked dimmer than usual, that wasn't the town. That was you. So there's a real gap here. The rule doesn't make you touch oxygen until 12:05. Your night vision started fading at 5. Your judgment and reaction time are measurably slower by 10. That whole middle band, 5 to 12,000 feet, is legal to fly with no oxygen at all, and it's also a band where a careful pilot might choose to use it anyway. Legal and smart are not always the same altitude. Let me put this in a real scenario, because that's where it lives. You're flying a normally aspirated single out west. Let's say you're crossing high terrain and the only comfortable way over is at 13,500 feet. You've got a passenger. Your brother-in-law, first time in a small airplane. The leg over the high ground is going to take about 50 minutes at that altitude. Walk through the reg with me. You're above 12.5 and below 14. So you, the required crew, need oxygen for any part of that above 30 minutes. 50 minutes at 13.5 means you are legally required to be on oxygen for the back 20 minutes of that crossing. Your brother-in-law, below 15,000, so the regulation requires nothing for him. But now flip on the pilot brain instead of the lawyer brain. You've been at 13.5 for the better part of an hour. Your reaction time is degraded whether you feel it or not. You're about to descend into a valley, in the mountains, possibly with terrain and turbulence and a nervous passenger, which is exactly the moment you need every bit of your judgment. Is that the flight where you want to be running right at the legal minimum? Or is that the flight where you go on oxygen at the bottom of the climb and just breathe easy the whole way across? You already know my answer. The regulation would let you wait. The mountains don't grade on the regulation. Now, a practical note, because this stuff isn't theoretical. If you're going to fly high with any regularity, you need to think about the equipment. There are portable oxygen systems built exactly for general aviation, a small bottle, a regulator, and either a cannula or a mask. The cannula, the little nose piece, is generally good up to about 18,000 feet. Above that, you're into masks, because a cannula can't keep up. And here's a tip that separates the people who talk about oxygen from the people who actually use it. Get a pulse oximeter. It's that little clip that goes on your fingertip. Costs about the price of a nice lunch, and it reads the oxygen saturation in your blood. You want to see numbers up in the mid-90s. When you watch that number sag into the 80s as you climb, hypoxia stops being an abstract concept from a written test and becomes a thing you can literally watch happening to your own body. Nothing makes a believer out of a pilot faster. Let me tie this back to the airman certification standards for a second. Because if you're a student or you're headed for a check ride, this shows up. The ACS lists aeromedical factors as a knowledge area, and hypoxia sits right at the top of that list. The examiner is looking for you to know the difference between the types of hypoxia, to know the symptoms, and yes, to know these oxygen altitude requirements cold. If a designated examiner asks you when supplemental oxygen is required and you can rattle off 12.5 for 30 minutes, 14,000 continuous, 15,000 for passengers, and then you add that the AIM recommends it much lower, and here's why, you've just shown that examiner you understand the rule and the reason behind it. That second part is what turns a memorized answer into a pilot they trust, and I want to be straight with you about something. Learning all of this is hard, and flying is expensive, and it's really tempting to file the oxygen rule under things I'll deal with when I fly higher and move on. I get it. Most of us spend our early years down in the weeds where none of this applies. But the day you get that faster airplane, or you point the nose at real mountains, or you take a night flight over dark terrain to get above the bumps, this rule and the physiology behind it are suddenly the whole ballgame. Better to have it living in your head before you need it than to go looking for it at 13,000 feet with a headache you can't explain. So, here's what I want you to carry out of this. The numbers are 12, 5, 14, and 15. Crew, after 30 minutes, crew continuously, passengers provided all of them measured at the cabin, not the wing. And underneath the rule, the truth, your body needs oxygen long before the FAA requires it. 10,000 by day, as low as 5,000 by night. Fly the physiology, not just the regulation, and you'll never be the pilot who felt just fine right up until the moment nothing made sense. The details today come straight from 14 CFR 91-11 and the guidance in the Aeronautical Information Manual. And if you want to read the actual language yourself, it's worth 10 quiet minutes with a cup of coffee. You can find more of these breakdowns over at radiohangar.com. Fly high if you want to. Just don't do it alone up there without knowing what the thin air is quietly doing to you. Put the mask on early. I'll see you next time.